We are not welcoming our speaker tonight because he wasn't crazy enough to drive in this weather down. So we are doing something completely different. And now for something completely for this unprecedented low amount of people at about 20. So this will be interesting. But we're going to, in four chunks, we're going to go through the steps, have four people talk about a couple steps each. And we're going to start with Jeff, who's going to do one, two, and three.
Thanks. Woo-hoo. Yeah, we figured it would be a little less boring having four people talk for 15 minutes each than to have one long person talk for an hour. So chances are it would have been a home group member, which you've probably already heard already anyway. So, but my name is Jeff Malkhawk. This is my home group. I love this group. I showed up here. I got sober on August 29th, 2007. And that was a Thursday, I believe. I'm not here. And so I showed up on Thursday. I believe it was a Thursday. And by Saturday, I met this guy who became my sponsor. And basically, I met him over when they had this meeting, similar to what we're doing tonight over at the New Jerusalem Church over there, which was kind of a spin-off of this meeting. And he kind of, like, basically, in so many words, you know, I told him that I'd been coming around AA for quite some time, and he kind of was like, I asked him for help in so many words, and he kind of was like, well, so how long have you been coming around AA? And I was like, well, you know, since 2001, and it was then 2007, and he asked me that question that I ask a lot of guys now that I meet in AA, whether they're here a week or 12 years, is, Have you been through the steps? Have you been through the work? And I was like, no. And he's like, I remember so specifically him going, don't you think it's kind of crazy that you've been coming around a 12-step program and you haven't, like, taken the 12 steps? And that didn't like seem odd to me. I just, you know, I was so full of old ideas. I was like, well, why would I do that? You know, it's like the only thing we're offering here, and you're not taking advantage of the one thing that they offer. But that guy became my sponsor, and I called. He read some stuff. I called him the next day, and we got together Sunday, and I met my friend Rich that Sunday. And my sponsor was like, "Okay, be at this meeting tomorrow, up here in Allentown Road in Quakertown." And I live in New Jersey, and he lived kind of near New Jersey in Riegelsville, and I was like, that's like a half an hour from my house, man. And he was like, yeah, be there. I was like, okay, I'll be there. And I remember pulling in, it was outside, it was August, and it was outside. We all were hanging out by the pavilion, and kids were playing on the swing set, and people had their blankets and their chairs out. And I pulled in, and I was like, what the heck is this? I'm like, is this like a family reunion or what? I'm like, what is, like, all these people, like, all laughing and hugging each other? I'm like, this is crazy. And I remember Ante spoke, and I was just blown away. I've been coming back ever since, man. I love this group. I love the energy that exists here. So so that's my little home story group, my home group story, I should say. Yeah, there you go, home group story. So anyway, so I had been coming in and out of AA for a while, I'm gonna try to keep this to 15 minutes. Actually, it should only be like 12 minutes because we already wasted a few minutes in the beginning. So I'm not necessarily one to be short-winded talking about one, two, and three. I've been known to, like, corner guys outside of meetings in like 20-degree weather and cold and rain and talk to them for at least half an hour about one, two, and three to get them right to that action of, you know, taking an inventory. Because that's kind of how it was placed to me. It was not a whole lot of stuff I needed to do once I got here to get to an inventory. And my sponsor pretty much qualified me. Like I said, I had been to a bunch of meetings, and I didn't do anything. I showed up. I just didn't drink, and that was the game plan for me. Don't drink. Get everything I want. And that never happened. So needless to say, I ended up drinking a bunch of times and coming back and then going back to AA, not drinking, and then leaving and going out and drinking and coming back. And that was kind of my cycle. And then, like I said, I met this guy, and he gave me this little spiel about the steps. And he kind of was like, after he asked me about why I would come around a 12-step program and not to do the 12 steps, he kind of said to me, he said, okay, well, I'll help you. He said, do you have a big book? I said, yeah, I got a big book. I've been in AA since 2001, dude. And my friend gave me one the first day I got there outside of an institution. And he said, okay, do you read it? And I said, no. And he said, okay, you're going to now, because if we're going to do the steps, we're doing them out of that book. And we're going to be talking about what's in that book, and we need to be talking about the same damn thing. And I said, okay. And he said, I want you to go home. I want you to read the doctor's opinion. I want you to read We Agnostics. I want you to call me tomorrow. And I said, oh, okay. I said, you know, Greg, I don't think these steps are going to work for me. And he goes, Jeff, those steps don't care what you think. He said, they're spiritual principles. They do what they do regardless of what you think or how you feel, whether you understand them or not. And he started talking about gravity and the principle of gravity and what a principle was. And basically, I kind of was like, okay, whatever you want me to do. And I went home and I read that stuff and I called him the next day and we got in the car and he told me a lot about the history of AA. It was a big thing, which I like to do with guys. Talk a lot about, talk a little bit about what happened before AA even existed and then what happened in order for us to get where we are. And this whole principle of one alcoholic sharing with another for the sole purpose of lowering your indifference to me. So you trust me enough to take some actions you don't think are going to work. And I realized that's what he did in the kitchen that night, because I went home and I was like, okay, I don't think this stuff's going to work, but I'll do it. And he qualified me this way. He said, Jeff, when you take a drink, do you know with any certainty what's going to happen, whether you're going to stop or not, or when you're going to stop? And I said, well, sometimes I can. And he said, Jeff, that's not very certain. And I said, okay, well, with any certainty, no, I don't know with any certainty what happens when I take a drink. And he said, when you stop drinking, do you know with any certainty when you're going to pick a drink up? And I was like, no, not really. I said, generally, as soon as possible. And he said, okay, so when you take a drink, you don't have any power over stopping. And when you're stopped, you don't have any power over picking a drink up. Basically, you don't have any power over staying stopped. And he said, as a result of those two conditions, you can't solve the problems in your life, and your problems pile up, and your ability to deal with your problems goes down. And he said, your life shifts out of balance, and you'll never be able to right that balance. I said, okay. And he said, okay, there's one other thing. As a result of that powerlessness and unmanageability, if you keep drinking the way you're drinking, your alcoholism is going to kill you. And I believed him. I really did. I was like, oh, my God, I was at a point already coming back in after all those years of just, like, ready to either I was going to die or I was going to kill somebody. I don't know. Something bad was going to happen. And I really believed him. I was really that hopeless. And I was like, okay. And he said, now, Jeff, that's pretty much the first step. He said, the second step is simply this. Are you willing to believe that there's something stronger than you, more powerful than you, that can help you out of that situation? And I kind of knew the whole God thing because it was, power greater than you. It's like, okay, dude, that's code word for God. I get it. You're trying to slip it in there. And I didn't really have too fond ideas of God at that point. And he assured me again that he didn't care what I thought about God. He just said, are you willing to believe in something greater than you that can help you? And I said, well, dude, you just like convinced me that I'm going to die because of this thing called alcoholism. Yeah, I mean, if this whatever it is can help me, okay. Yeah, okay. I'm willing to believe in something. And he said, okay, that's it. That's all we need. He said, are you ready to make a decision to do something about that? And he brought me to the third step and wrote a little about self-propulsion and all those things about why when I'm out there trying to get what I want for me, I'm constantly in collision with you and you're just trying to get what you want and we're constantly at odds and I'm doing stuff to you. You're just turning around doing stuff back to me, except I can't see what I did to you, because I'm completely dishonest and delusional. So all I see is what you're doing to me and that you're harming me. And I walk through every day like that. And the world does not look good. I cannot be comfortable when I believe everybody's out to hurt me and harm me. And he said, basically, the third step of decision is to stop playing God and just be Jeff and let God be God, whatever that is to you. Because I really didn't have much of a concept of God. I just knew it was something greater than me, and I kind of was like, okay. And he kind of brought me to the point where he talked about the employer. And really, he said the decision simply is a yes or no question, really. He's like, and I hear many people said this since then, is that it's not, the step doesn't read, we turn our lives over to God. It doesn't say that. He said it. We said we make a decision to do something. We make a decision to turn our life on our will over to God. And the decision implies further action based on the decision. And so I said, yes. And he kind of said, well, he said, basically what the decision is that God is simply coming to you saying, listen, you've been trying to run your life on your own. Here's the deal. I'm going to run your life for you, and you're going to show up and work for me. And he said, the book kind of talks about we have a new employer. If we take this position, we make our decision, we have a new employer. God, that employer provides everything that you'll need in order to do the job. And basically he kind of told me, he said, Jeff, your job, your decision is simply to love and serve others. That's God's job for you. And God will provide whatever you need to do that so long as you're willing to show up and do that on a daily basis. And I thought that was great news. I was like, okay, that's easy, man. Okay, I'm pretty sure I can love and serve others. Pretty sure. Thought I've been doing that for a long time. Inventory. I realized that I really hadn't been doing that. Thought I was, but I really wasn't. But what he said to me, and I'll premise this into what Paul is going to talk about. I kind of said, yeah, okay, I'll take the job. Yeah, I can feel that in my heart. Yes, I want the job. And he said, okay, that's great. He said, but unfortunately, there's some things in your life that are directly going to block you from doing the job you just took. And he said, those things are resentment, fear, and harms caused to others, most likely through physical relations and other relations. And he said, that's where the rubber meets the road is now. We need to find out what's blocking you from doing the job you just took. And it was just as simple as that. And he was like, get a pen, get a piece of paper, start writing an outline. That was it. There was no long writings on my first step of how many times I've been powerless in my life or what I think, second step writings of how I should, what do I want God to be? He simply was like a couple questions. Conclusions drawn, like the first step simply is a conclusion drawn on my information prior, my experience prior getting here, and somebody going, is this you? And me going, yes. Okay, let's move on. Are you willing to believe there's something else? Yes. Okay, let's move on. Are you willing to do something about it and take some actions that you don't think are going to work? Yes. Okay. And, so again, that brings me up to the inventory, which Paul is going to come up and talk about. And I'll just say this, that I went through the rest of the work and my life has radically changed. My perception of life has radically changed. And the world really hasn't changed much at all. You guys and the world, people out there, really have not changed much, really. But the way I see the world and the way I see you guys changed radically. And as a result, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a drug since August 29th of 2007. And it's as a result of following these directions, following a sponsor, and just trying to seek a relationship with something greater than me on a daily basis to the best of my ability. So I'll ask Paul to come up. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Paul Munch. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date's May 28, 2007. And when I came back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a complete mess. I had burned my life to the ground. And a second time, and this time thoroughly, I thoroughly burned my life to the ground. I gave away everything. And I suffered for May, June, July, August, September. So I'm in AA. I came back to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because I had been here once before and never did a damn thing to change anything about me, never took direction, never listened to anything anybody had to say because I knew better. And where that got me was 2.5 years of dry sobriety, relapse, and it got worse. When I relapsed, I didn't just start drinking again. It led me to substances that I had never done. But I know that when I was in the teens of my life, I said, if I ever do heroin, I'll know I gotta quit. And I knew I had to quit. And it was Jeff, actually, who I saw at Regalsville. And I was a bundle of fuck. I was a frickin' mess, man. For months on end. But I knew when I made a decision to change my life, I knew where to go. Because when I was here and I spent time not drinking and going to meetings, I saw people who had talked about the process of the 12 steps, the suggestions. They followed the suggestions, and I saw those people. And a very influential man that comes to this meeting a lot, but the weather obviously has kept him away. But I was at a meeting in Bethlehem when I came back, and, you know, I was just crying, full of pain, just suffering. And I left midday. And my dear friend Jim was outside, and I went walking over, you know, by him, and I said hi to him. And he remembered me, and he said, Paul. He looked at me, and he said, how long do you want to suffer? And I said, I don't want to suffer anymore. And he said, come on over to the hotline. So I drove over to the hotline and met him over there. Now, I couldn't read. I couldn't comprehend. I was coming off of a number of substances, and he read the third step to me, and we prayed the third step prayer. And then not long after that, I saw Jeff over in Regalsville, and we stood out in the parking lot of Regalsville, and Jeff kind of said a lot of the same things you just heard him say now that his sponsor had said to him, you know. And I knew I was hopeless. I knew I had no ability to change on my own. And the people that I had seen, that I came back to seek, were people who had changed and who had a glow and who had an understanding of the program, and I believe had a spiritual awakening as a result of this program. So my sponsor, who I met probably sitting right where Dave is, in this meeting, I started coming to Feet First 5 years ago, four and a half, 5 years ago, and I kicked over his coffee, and I helped clean it up with him, and I met my sponsor, Roy. I was like coming around now for about probably 8 or 9 months, and him and I made contact, and I saw something in this guy, man. He just had this, like, glow that I was just like, whoa. He had salvaged his marriage with his wife. He had his children and his family. And those are the things I wanted. Like, I wanted that to happen. Unfortunately, that wasn't my path. But I seeked his help in trying to live that, to make that be a part of my life where I salvaged my marriage and my children didn't have to live in two separate homes. And when I finally decided that I would ask Roy, I had talked to a number of people in the home group and asked Roy to, you know, I'm thinking about asking Roy. Everybody's like, yeah, you know. So I asked Roy to be my sponsor, and we went down this path. And when we got to the fourth step, and he said, you know, I'm going to send you out now. You have 5 days to put this on paper because we're meeting this day. And I said, okay. So, you know, I went to the big book, page 65, or 65, is it? I think 65. And, you know, it says, I'm resentful at, and the cause and the effect is how it's laid out in the big book. What I'm resentful at, the cause, and the effect of that cause. And see, when I wrote my fourth step, I was only thinking about me, you know? I mean, who else was involved? So I was basically writing my perspective on paper, the way I saw things. And see, up to this point in my life, I didn't see things right. And I had to have that pointed out. So there was a fourth column. And what I do with my sponsees is I write a fourth column, basically. When I sit down with a sponsee, like when I sat down with my sponsor, he took notes. And in those notes are, I give you my resentment. I tell you exactly why, and I tell you what it affected in me. And he tells me how wrong I am with the way I think and points out every reason why I'm incorrect. And when we did that for about 2.5 hours and went through name after name, institution after institution, I had nothing I could really say that I was right about. I really didn't have anything that I perceived correctly. And I trusted my sponsor because he was happy, joyous, and free. So I took everything he said to heart, and I expanded on that. And I took that as, for me, where I needed to change. And obviously, my thinking was the number one thing I had to change. See, not picking up a drink and drug, that's the easy part for me. It was for this alcoholic and addict. See, because the pain got so great, I just didn't want to suffer anymore. But if I didn't do what's suggested, it's inevitable I would have drank and drugged again. Because the pain will only get... Our friend Dave always says, from Boston, always says, the number one reason we relapse is sobriety. And what he means by that is, if I don't do anything, it's the lack of not having a substance in my body that makes me want to do a substance, whether it's alcohol or drugs or whatever. Whatever, if I don't do anything to change me, I'm still going to only know what I know, you know, and that is relief through alcohol. So I had to have my whole concept of everything rewired, you know. Like, my wires were black and green, blue and white, you know, they were all mixed up. If there's any electricians in here, you know what I mean when I say I was not wired right. I was short-circuited, no doubt. And when I sat down with my sponsor and we did this fourth step, or this fifth step, and he filled out all of the reasons why I was so incorrect on my thinking, I went home and I did what the book says. I took time alone in the dark, is what I chose to do. I prayed and I asked God to please help me to make sure and give me any thoughts that I might have missed things that would help me get better faster. And there was only two things that I thought of after sitting, after my fifth step, that I believed that I should have talked to my sponsor about when we did my fifth step. And I called him the next day, and we talked about them. And I was wrong on those two also. And the pattern was pretty obvious to me. See, because there was two pages of things written down, people, places, and things. And that's 24 lines per page. So that's 48 things that I had no clue as to why this was happening, but I was wrong about all 48 the way I thought and the way I saw it. When we did that fifth step, though, it was the first time. No, I mean, I had done a fifth step prior to it with another sponsor. And I was thorough then, but it wasn't the same response that I got this time around. And it's tough love, I believe, for alcoholics that we need, a lot of us need, is tough love. We hate hearing the truth about ourselves. First, we can't stand telling you the truth, so why would we want to hear the truth about us? So there's a lot of like stuff that we got to swallow and just say, you know what? I am willing to do this. I'm willing to hear my character flaws and why I might think of something this way when it really is this way. And when I started becoming awakened to that, and we moved in to a week later or so, 2 weeks later, we met over at the gazebo at Penn Foundation, and we sat in the gazebo while the meeting was going on Thursday night, and him and I did 6 and 7 in the gazebo. And, you know, the willingness was there. When I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God back in 3, I decided that there was nothing that I wouldn't do. Nothing. So when I got to 6, I was definitely willing. But when I got to 7, and we prayed the 7-step prayer, and I cried. And I wasn't crying because I didn't want to change. I was crying because I was relieved to know that I finally wanted to change. And I wanted everything to change about me. And today, I pray the 3rd and 7th step prayer pretty much daily, morning, afternoon, evening, in church, on the toilet, driving my car. I pray everywhere I am, when I'm anywhere. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. I ask God for help, and I ask God to guide me, and I ask God to put people in my life for me to help, because that's what I need to do to stay grounded. And in 7, when we said the 7-step prayer, from day one when we prayed the 7-step prayer, I decided right then and there that I wasn't going to humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings. I basically decided that I was humbly going to beg God to change everything about me, because I want nothing to do with the person I used to be. Nothing. It's funny because Gordon was at this meeting just this past week, and when Jeff asked me what I wanted to speak on, he gave me the option 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I was like, 4, 5, 6, 7, because I just kind of spoke on that. See, I viewed life through these pair of glasses that were built out of ego. And my perception was way off, and I needed to be brought into check. And that's what this process did. That's what this program does for us. It brings us back to reality. It takes our delusional thinking and takes us into reality. And that's the only place we're going to survive, is in reality. Delusion is death. Ego, pride, self-centeredness, all of that stuff is going to kill me. So I had to be willing to have God change me, because I couldn't do it. You can't do it. No human power is great enough, but God can do anything if we ask, and all we got to do is be willing. So I ask and humbly beg God every day to change me. I have simple prayers that I say all day long, and one of my favorite is, God, please change me. Thanks for letting me share.
Okay, that brings me to 8 and 9. I'm Shelley, I'm an alcoholic. Doesn't matter my sobriety date, but 3.5 years ago, I decided to go through the steps. And I won't bore you with the beginning of them, but I was sober 9 years at the time and was on my knees and needed help, and I didn't drink, but I did decide to go through the steps and ask someone to work with me and walked through them. And I had an amazing experience with 8 and 9, and I'm still today, I get on my soapbox about people following through. Like, you hear, oh, I did a 4th and 5th, you know, great. You know, that's not where the freedom is. You got to keep going. 8 and 9 is where the freedom is. Or that's where I found my freedom, and then some after that. But I did do a pretty thorough 4th and 5th, and there were a couple things that came up that kind of like I just thought were new to me. Like in 7, my sponsor kept coming up with these words that fit the character defects that I would be asking God to remove. And the one that he said that stuck with me in this fourth and fifth step was inconsiderate. And prior to that, I had not thought that I was inconsiderate, or at least not often inconsiderate. But he kind of helped me see that that was a little more, we don't have to laugh that much about it, guys. that was a little more true than I knew. So I make this list, and we kind of go through it. I take it from my four step, and then I add those that I've harmed from my inventories and anybody I missed. And we made a list and kind of went through, these I can do now, these live away, these are dead, these are, you know, kind of how I would separate out doing them. And I decided to go to my aunt and uncle first. We had become kind of estranged after my dad had died, and to preclude the story, my mother died when I was 22, and my father remarried within 6 months to a woman that had five children that were still in school. My brother and I were already graduated from college, so there went my dad off to this woman, and apparently they were having an affair, which didn't make me happy, nor any of the family friends. So this woman was packing up my house like within 2 months after my mom died, because they were going to move in together. And I didn't know this woman from Adam, and from the moment I found out about her and I saw her in my house, I hated her. That wicked stepmother thing all the way, for years and years and years. I mean, I hated her. If you can think of the person you hate the most, that you will never make amends to, it'll be the last person on your list. I used to think, you know, before I walked through the steps 3.5 years ago, I used to say out loud to people that the only way I would ever make amends to her was when she was laying in her coffin dead. That's how much I hated her. I mean, and like, I would hang around people who also were kind of living in untreated alcoholism, even though they were sober, and they would co-sign my bullshit. I'd be like, I'd talk about Jesse this and Jesse that, and they'd be like, yeah, yeah, you know, she was awful to you, and right? So I had a lot of people helping me with that resentment, and it was validated. They validated that she was awful to me, and I deserved to hate her, and that was okay, right? So, and especially family friends, because they disowned my father after he married her. But so hated. So she was on my list, but she was the one that I was inconsiderate to. When we flipped the page and looked at my part, she was the one that I was inconsiderate to, the way I treated her, which kind of made me go, And I had realized that she was a very nice woman, that she loved my dad and was fabulous to him. I mean, I say this all the time, and she ironed his underwear. I mean, she just, like, worshipped him and just, like, really took care of him, and she really did. She just was really, and took my bullshit a lot for many, many, many years and never really retaliated. But anyway, but I didn't see it that way until I did this fourth and fifth and started to think about it. So I go out to make this amends to my aunt and uncle. I ride the motorcycle out, and I get there. We catch up. They're so happy to see me, blah, 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 blah. My dad would be so proud of me, la, 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 la. And then my aunt says to me, and here's the thing, is that I hadn't, you know, you hear this stuff about cleaning up your side of the street and, you know, being so selfish and self-centered, especially for 9 years in this program, I had heard and thought that, you know, this amends thing was about me and freeing myself and, you know, getting this off my chest and saying I'm sorry and moving on. I come to find out in that first amends that I made that when I made the amends, I made the approach and made the amends and said I want to go forward having a good relationship. The person I've been is not the person that God wants me to be, and it's not the person that I want to be. And, you know, was there anything they wanted to say or add to that? And my uncle, who's sitting a little more back, he starts going on. He's like, you know, I didn't, you know, when your dad died and the funeral thing, and I was just really upset, and it's not that I wanted to hurt you or your boyfriend. And he talked for like 15 minutes, like unloading all this stuff about how he felt bad, about how he had treated me and how it all happened. And I just sat there like, wow, like I never heard him talk so much ever in my life. This is my father's brother, and I didn't realize how burdened he was about how our relationship had gone bad and his part in it, and how bad he felt. And I was just like, wow. And so I, at that point, I recognized that it wasn't just about me, this immense thing, but it was about, you know, giving him the freedom too, because he was then free, you know, for like 5 years. He had held on to this horrible feeling of how he felt that he had harmed me. So that was beautiful to begin with. But then my aunt says to me, bless you. My aunt says to me, so, like, how many people are on this list, you know, the 8-step list? And I was like, I don't know, like 25 people or so. And she says, well, Jessie's not on that list, is she? And I said, well, yeah, Ann, she is. You know, Jessie is just another one of God's kids. And, I mean, she loved my dad, and I treated her badly. And, yeah, she's on the list. And she's like, you don't have to make amends to her. She was worse to you than you were ever to her. And man, I'll tell you, right before doing that fourth and fifth of my sponsor, I'd have been like, yeah, you're right. What was I thinking? Never mind. But that's not what came out. You know, what came out was, yes, I do. I need to make amends to this woman. And so she gave me her number. And on the motorcycle ride home, which was like a 35-minute ride, by the time I got home, I wanted to call her. I wanted to talk to her. I wanted to make amends to her. And, you know, they say, I think they say in the big book, that God does for you what you cannot do for yourself. That's exactly what God did. Because on that ride home, somehow that seed was planted there. And on that ride home, God just switched my thinking 180 degrees from anger and hatred to love. Just like that. And I feel like I did nothing. You know, when people say, well, you did the work, you did the steps, you know, you listened and followed direction and took a look at yourself. I'm sure that's true, but it still feels like such a minimal effort for the great, great, great blessing that God gave me in changing that. Because by the time I got home, I wanted to call her, and I would have thought, for real, that she was last on my list. I'd pray for years till I finally was ready and willing. And just like that, I was more than ready and willing. And I called my sponsor, and he's like, well, go ahead, call her, you know? And so I'm like, okay. You know, so I called her, and I wanted her to answer. Like, I wanted to hear her voice. It had been years, like 6 years. And I wanted to hear her voice. I wanted her to answer. I wanted to see her. And she answered. And I was like, you know, hi, Jessie, it's Shelly. And she's like, Shelly? And I'm like, Burroughs. And she's like, oh my God, Shelly, how are you doing? Like, it was yesterday. Like, she was just waiting for this phone call. And so we set up a time to meet, and I went down, and I was freaked out that morning. And I guess I was just stressed and nervous. And even though I was ready, it was a big thing. And when she answered the door, because I went to her house, that's a whole other story we don't have time for. But when I went to her house, she answered the door, and I was so happy to see her. I mean, I was just, like, we hugged each other, and I, like, started to cry immediately. We went downstairs and talked, and I made the amends, and, you know, years of feuding fall away in an hour because everything was gone. She made the amends and returned to me that she knew she had harmed me, and we just sat there the whole time. We held hands and just sat there and talked and cried, and, you know, it was the most beautiful thing ever, and still today it is, that I could love this woman who I, you know, didn't realize that for so long, any anger or hatred I had about anything in this world or anybody, I lumped it all in her. And she was like my scapegoat for anger and hatred because I felt validated somehow. And so to have that turnaround is just beyond amazing. You know, when after we were during the amends process, when we were sitting and talking and crying together, I realized it came to me because my dad, when I did my fourth and fifth, I love him unconditionally. And I had said, boy, I wish I could love everybody the way I love my dad. Wouldn't that be cool? And that feels like that's happened to me since that time. I realized that she's the only other person on this planet who loves my father as much as I do. that nobody else loves him or knows him as well as the two of us, even my brother. And real quick, after I made that amends with her, within a month, my brother and I hadn't talked for 9 years because I had turned him in for child abuse when I first got sober, and he was pretty pissed off, and he was going to piss all over my grave and all this kind of stuff. But we hadn't talked for, he wouldn't talk to me, and I thought it was him and not me. But within a month, this is what I believe happens. God opened my heart, right? And even though I thought my brother was blocking me, I think I was blocking him, because as soon as he opened my heart and made that amends and opened that love with Jesse, the universe, it opened love to the universe, because within a month at Christmas time, my brother started talking to me at my aunt's at Christmas. He just started talking to me across the table like it was yesterday that we were best friends. And I just sat there like, what is going on? And since then, I mean, right now, my brother and I are back to the relationship that we had, so close, and it's so cool. But I think that opened it all up. Boom, just opened my heart and opened the universe. And God just said, okay, so we'll bring all that love back. And so I'm back with my brother, and we're tight again. And it's crazy. So that's my time. And now we're going to have our honorary group member, Miss Stacy, do 10, 11, and 12. And then pretty much stay at the podium.
Okay. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Alcoholic Stacy Metzler. Hi, everyone. I love this home group. I met several of these home group members when I got sober in Maine. Like, there's no sober people in Quakertown. But there you are. My sobriety date is January 10th, 2007. And I'm speaking on, 10, 11, 12 here. So 10, 11, 12 are the maintenance steps. This whole thing is like trust God, clean house, help others. That's really the whole thing in a nutshell. And the clean house stuff is all the middle stuff. And 10 is a clean house thing every single day. Because I hate to tell you this, but this is the job of a lifetime, because I'm kind of not well. So I need 10 all the time. So, and I feel like I was duped when I got here. I distinctly remember when I got sober in Maine, I was going through this thing called an AWOL. They're really big in New England. It's a way of life. And I remember doing the fourth step in this AWOL group, and then we got to 10, and I was like, what the heck? 10 is 4. And it really is. 10 is like a mini 4, you know? It's like you're taking that inventory because... But I'm doing it every day because I am selfish, dishonest, resentful, and fearful every day. It's not as strong as it used to be because I do this stuff pretty much all the time with your help and God's help, thank God. But continue to take personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admitted it. I never promptly admitted anything. I just stuffed it all and had this gigantic resentment that allowed me to drink for a very long time, because you were all walking around on this planet trying to F with me so that I could drink. That's my MO. So all day long I would get more angry, more angry, more angry, more angry, more angry, and then the only solution I had was alcohol. Now I have this stuff to do, which is amazing. And 10 is amazing because I am selfish, dishonest, resentful, and fearful on a daily basis, but I have a mechanism, I have a tool to use that I never had prior to learning this way of life. And I have a list about an arm length long of women that I call when I'm up in my head and I'm running my own show and I need to take that personal inventory. And I call Alina, and I call the lovely Shelley, and I call Lauren S., who's part of this group, and I call Nicole S., and I just call and call and call and call and call and call until I get somebody on the phone. because I know these women aren't going to let me walk around and co-sign my bull. They say, so, Stacy, after I go, and I vomit on the phone. So they're like, oh, that's really interesting, Stacy. So where are you selfish? Where are you dishonest? Where are you resentful? Where are you fearful? I love page 84. Do you have to make amends in real time? And then you hear this large popping sound, because the last part of that is me not looking at me and me turning my thoughts out to see who God is going to put in front of me to help. It's the 4x4. Where am I selfish, dishonest, resentful, and fearful? Make amends in real time if I have to, and then turn my thoughts to someone to help. I need specific directions, because I make my own stuff up if I don't have specific directions. I follow the directions as best I possibly can. 11, I'm really good at the prayer part. I pray all the time. I talk to God like God's my bud. I walk around going, thank you, God. I do my prayers in the morning when I'm on my regular schedule. Wendell hangs out with me. Wendell's my cat. And I just hang with Wendell, and I read daily reflections. I got sober at a 7 a.m. daily reflections meeting in Brunswick, Maine. Sunrise Serenity, it's a great place to visit in the summer. So I do my prayers in the morning. I pray throughout the day. I do a thing called centering prayer. A series of events happened that brought me to do centering prayer. I don't do it well. I don't do as rigorously and as frequently as I would like to, but I do try and get quiet, because to me the meditation part is where the prayer part is, I'm doing the asking, and the meditation part is where I'm doing some listening. I need to listen so that God can guide me. And at this part in the steps, you're awake enough, hopefully, you're awake enough so that you can listen and be God-guided. I do seek all the time, and God doesn't make too hard terms with those that seek. And I really do seek on a daily basis. 12 is awesome. I absolutely love 12. I love being the beacon for God. I love being God's paper girl. I love showing up for God. I love being the light. Oh, God, please don't cry, Metzler. I have had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. I have not had a spiritual awakening as a result of going to meetings. I have had a spiritual awakening as a result of doing the actions in these steps as guided by my sponsor and the other lovely humans that I've met on this path. Because I think a sponsorship thing, you have a sponsor, but for me, for this alcoholic, I have to be plugged into a lot of people, because a lot of people show me the path. I really do try and carry this message, not my message. You don't want my message. My message will get you drunk. You don't want my message. You want this message in the first 164 pages of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I am a drunk and I do not have any idea how to manage my own life. I need to do what's laid out in front of me. I try my best to practice these principles in all of my affairs, and I have a couple of sponsees, and they are a godsend because they are half nuts. They're just like me when I first got sober, and just like this really cool series of events has just recently happened. I have one sponsee who's runs a halfway house, and that's really amazing. She's 8 months sober, and she's like running this halfway house, and she's using these principles running this halfway house, and it's actually going pretty well. And she's done the steps, so she's doing really, really well, and like living a life, which is crazy. And I have another sponsee who, was it last week? It was last weekend. called me, and she was cutting herself, and she was drinking herself to death, and she wanted to kill herself. And that's me when I came here. I wanted to kill myself. I was actively attempting to kill myself at the end of 2006. So she calls me last week with all kinds of wackadoodle drama, and she's trying to kill herself. She's drunk as a skunk, and I call 911. And she won't answer the door for the police and the ambulance. Anyway, to make a long story short, she's done steps 1, 2, and 3 with me this weekend. Saturday, we're writing her fourth step. And she's having a spiritual awakening before my very eyes. Doing step 12 is something you don't want to miss. It distinctly says it in the big book, and working with others, you want to see the light going on in somebody else's eyes. It's the most miraculous darn thing. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. From a woman that wanted to off herself last week to a woman who's like, wow, this stuff works. Because I'm distinctly a move a muscle, change the thought kind of girl, because I didn't think any of this stuff was going to work for me, but I just did it anyway, and that's the way she is too. We're doing set-aside prayer because she thinks this stuff is a bunch of horse shit like I did, and now she's just doing it and it's actually working. She called me today on my way up here to say she was praying for her boss. She's doing the sick man prayer. Guess what her boss is? Her boss is one of us. So hopefully she can be the beacon for him, because that's how this thing works. We have the spiritual awakening. We get to be the beacon. And hopefully through her prayers, maybe this man will find the hope that I've found here, and hopefully have passed on a little bit of that to you tonight. Thanks for letting me speak.
So anyway, so thank everybody for sharing all our step work tonight. And we have an anniversary of our honorary home group member. Stacy is celebrating 7 years, or did 2-3 weeks ago. I don't know. Whatever. The 10th? Yeah, it's been a while. We've been trying to get this run. But she happened to make it up tonight. So I've been working with Stacy for a couple years, and everybody, I say this, I need to come up with something else to say every time I give her a coin, but everybody should have a sponsee like Stacy, because she's very challenging. And I don't mean, well, she is challenging, but in the way that she continues to make me work my program and know how these steps work in real time, in real life, because she calls me with stuff, and she can just be like very challenging, like, yeah, no, I don't think so, Shelley. And I'll be like, okay. And, you know, we'll talk about selfish, you know, where were you selfish, dishonest, blah, 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 blah. And she can get pretty, I'll tell you, I'll just tell the story of how when she lost her job 2 years ago or so, she called and she was a mess. I remember pulling over to stop and talk to her. She was a mess. Just, oh, blah, 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 what do you do, money? And I took this job and I did it. And she gets pissed, really pissed. Blah, blah. And so like an hour on the phone and a bunch of torture after that for her, painful. And this is how it works. Because she works so hard at these steps and so hard at this program, when she just lost her job like a week ago, or Friday, was it? A week Friday.
No, last Monday.
Last Monday, a week ago. She called me, and she was almost jubilant that she lost her job. I was like, congratulations, you lost her job. She's like, God did for me what I could not do for myself. She did not fall apart at all. It was just the opposite. She was like, this is an opportunity for me. This is great, you know. Like, and at the end of the conversation, again, I said, congratulations on losing your job. And it was, you know, night and day, a complete different perspective on things. And that's because she works her tail off in this program. And so I'm very blessed. God was really, really working overtime and extra smart, using his intuitive stuff to put Stacy and I together. And she's been a blessing in my life.
Thanks, Shelley. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I love you. I love AA. Just keep doing this stuff because it totally works. If it worked for me, it can work for any one of you knuckleheads, too. Thanks.